And we're going to find my startup music, which sounds a lot like this. Good evening, everyone. Good morning. Good afternoon. Good night. It is Victoria Day. Yeah, that old hag, Queen Victoria. She has a day off here. Gave us a day off here in Kanatistan, Kanukistan. And so we're starting early. It's 10 a.m. here. But it's more importantly 4 p.m. over there in South Africa, where I'm very excited to finally get a very exciting podcaster and guest. And his name is Germ Warfare. I think Germ is short for Jeremy. So let me just right away say hello to Germ, and I'll turn down the volume so I actually hear him.
It's taken us a while to get you, and I think most of it is my own fault.
Well, first of all, you're super busy. I don't really expect any podcaster to want to join me only because they have their own voice. Why the hell do they need to be on someone else's show? But I like to bring on other podcasters that I listen to and that I like, because this is the only way really I can promote other people. And this is really the only way to find other really good podcasters. No one else is going to promote you other than like-minded people. No website that really is mainstream. So yeah, I like to highlight your work. And here is your screen, germwarfare.com, right on there. Why? It's funny. I interviewed a guy last night. He's a German guy. His real name is Jürgen, but he calls himself Jerry or John. And I think, is your real name Jeremy? Is that what
you're called? Yeah, my real name's Jeremy. The name Germ was just a nickname that I got when I was in school. And I kind of liked it later on in life, you know, because it's a play on the microbe germ with a G.
Yeah.
And that was where the warfare part came in. You know, there's just a whole bunch of wordplay, which I quite enjoyed, and it stuck.
And I love the way you start your show, Jeremy. Thank you for joining me in the trenches.
Well, it's just the continuation of the metaphor, you know, of the warfare and all that sort of thing. I see you've just come up with a broken link.
No, it's my website. My website is not as resilient as it could be. The problem is now when I share the window, every time I change screens, it shows up on the screen. So I have to be more judicious, because a lot of times I'm talking and trying to find something to show on the screen. So now I can't do it undercover because the window is sharing. So sorry about that. I just wanted to make sure that the website that I want is showing up on the screen here, because a lot of times I'm just doing something. I don't have a producer. Do you have a producer for your show?
I do everything myself.
Okay, so you know it's a juggling act. So you might, you're trying to listen, but you're trying to line up the next topic. You're trying to look at your notes. It's not easy.
Mm. I wish I had the money for a producer. It sounds pretty cool, but I'm not in that league. But having said that, I also enjoy doing things myself. And I know that it's also a vice, because you can end up wasting a lot of valuable time. There is something special about being, maybe something a bit hubris about being in control. You know, when you have a producer, you kind of lose that sense of control. But I don't know.
Well, I don't think it's a bad thing. If you have money, it's actually a good thing, because you can say, "Hey, Joe, can you throw this up on the screen? Or make sure this is coming out." Yeah, the guy behind, Joe, go search for this and bring it up when you have something. And then the producer.
You just make a Rogan reference?
Not really. I don't really like Joe Rogan too much, because I think he's a deceiver. But I'm thinking more of the Howard Stern era. I come from the Howard Stern era of radio. I think he really was the king of all radio back in the day. Now he's converted. And he always brought his producers into the show. So they would have microphones. They could talk. And there was so much back and forth. They literally became characters on a show.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's a really, really great thing. But you kind of need the resources for that.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I think you have the chops where you could get the resources. I think you have a really good voice. You have a great sound. You have a great set of guests. Obviously, you have some kind of pull where you can get guests. And as I said earlier, you're pretty good looking on the mic or on the video camera. And you have a really good sense of humor. Yeah, I just think you're a great podcaster. So that's really why I want to have you on and highlight your work.
I'll get you onto mine just as a form of reciprocation.
That's fine. You don't have to. But if you could link to this show on your site, that would be good enough. But I would be grateful for sure. Yeah.
Listen, I know I'm on your podcast, but I have to ask you a question.
Yeah.
Explain to me the name Fakeologist.
Okay. Well, before when I've always had pseudonyms. I've been on the computer since the 80s, back when I had an Apple II Plus. I'll give you the really fast. So everyone used a pseudonym. They never used their real name, even on the bulletin board systems in the 80s. No one used their real name. That's fine. So I just went along with it. So when I came onto the World Wide Web and decided to podcast, I just wanted a cool name. So I like Latin. I like Latin words. So I just started going through the list of Latin words, and I found aberrato. So I created a website called aberrato.info because .com was taken. And everyone, you know, it's just a name that provokes interest. People don't know what it means because most people don't know Latin. Anyway, so people started calling me AB. So I thought that was funny. I didn't ask for any of that, but that's what happened. But I just thought that was not a good descriptive term or website. And you have to keep it simple. So I wanted something that was one word, not too long, that was unique and that people could spell. So if you type Fakeologist anywhere, you'll probably come to my website. So it's really as simple as making it simple for people to find the website, because I do think I'm studying media fakery. I'm not really a media deconstructionist. I just have the opinion that all media is fake and manipulated, and Fakeologist means the study of fake. So there you go.
It's a pretty cool name.
I like it. I like it a lot. And it should be just simple. Like, for instance, you gave me the search engine Kaggy. Now, I guarantee you, if I talk to 100 people, maybe two people will be able to type that in properly. Because you don't know how to spell it. It's not an English word, per se. So it's just not easy, is what I'm trying to say. So I think you got to make it really easy for people to do things on computers. I've been in computers since the 80s. And I still have problems, and I deal with them every day because they're just not easy to use. So I want to make it easy. But thanks.
Can
for
you
asking.
Remember when you accessed the internet for the first time?
Well, I remember I was on bulletin board services, which were just dial-up text services. And then someone said, "Hey, why don't you check out the World Wide Web?" So the it just started bubbling up. So I don't remember the exact year, but I said, "Well, what's the World Wide Web?" Because I'm already on computer services. And they said, "No, you got to get an ISP, an internet service provider." Now, the place I was using did not have that service right at the time. So I signed up, and all of a sudden, using this Windows program with a graphical interface, which I really liked. And so that would have probably been in the 90s sometime. So right when it came out, basically. I don't know.
AltaVista.
Yeah, that's a search engine. I remember I had to download Netscape.
Yeah, Netscape. I remember that.
Yeah. So you go that far back too?
excuse me. Sort of. I mean, I think in high school at the time, and some friends were techies. I've never really been a techie. I've been a wannabe techie. I've always pretended that I've known a lot about tech, but I really don't. But I've always found it fascinating. So I would go to my friend's house and watch him figure out this AltaVista Netscape thing and see what he could find and search for.
Right.
And of course, as you do when you're in high school and you're a boy, the first thing you type in is breasts.
Right. Naked. Well, back in the day before the World Wide Web, there were these things called news groups. Where people would upload a binary file, which would have been a picture. So to download them would take quite some time, and they'd be really grainy and obviously no competition to Penthouse, Hustler, or Playboy resolution. So really it was really underwhelming, to say the least. And then when things got faster, we had video, which I would say porn has helped build the internet for sure. Because, you know, moving pictures take a lot of bandwidth. So I would say that has a lot to do with it, you know, but I think the military's behind the whole thing, any hoogie, and the education system mainly, because education institutions were trying to keep hooked up with an informal network, at least here in North America, to pass emails. So I was on those systems, and they work pretty well, actually. And it was fun back in the day. There's a whole documentary on BBSs that I'll recommend. I don't have it right now, but you can just look up BBS documentaries. It shows the guys that they were really techie geeky people back in the day. Now, just can I just get an idea how much time you have? Do you have to do a hard out, as we say in radio, or
no? I don't have to, but more no hard or less.
Okay, because I don't want to waste time talking about my crap, because this is a show about you, and I really want to get my questions. I actually went on a walk today, and I actually wrote down a lot of questions because I didn't want to waste too much time. So I've already gone through. Thank you for joining us in the trenches. We got that. Where'd you get that from? Well, I guess you already explained warfare.
Yeah, it's just a metaphor, really. The information, it's basically the trenches of the information war.
No, I think that's great. Now, I noticed on your video, I watch your videos, which I think are about an hour. Are those compacted from a larger video? Because I noticed some jump cuts in them sometimes.
Yeah, not really. You're talking maybe 3 or 4 minutes longer. Jump cuts are just there to make it look sexier. That's all. It's just killing white noise or dead space or whatever you call it.
You cut out the ums and the ahs?
A little bit here and there, and sometimes there's a connection failure, or you know, I mean, I live in Africa, and so I sometimes have very bad connectivity, or if I'm lucky, I have, you know, a full 24 hours of electricity. Awesome. You know, it's just a matter of making the video just look a little bit better. But I mean, you know, if you really are suspicious of any kind of editing. I can tell you right now that any of the guests by now would have moaned or complained, and not one of them has.
Oh, no, I'm not suspicious at all. I just thought you were trying to fit it into 60 minutes, maybe a format, so you didn't want it to go too long because of people's attention.
Nah, it's just about aesthetics, really.
And I want to say that I love the Dutch accent, and I also really love the Afrikaner accent. I think it's such a great accent.
So this is a very interesting point that you bring up. Sorry for interrupting there.
But please interrupt me, because I interrupt you too.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm not really an Afrikaner. Okay, so this is difficult to explain if you aren't South African, because now it kind of goes into culture a little bit. But
go for it.
My wife is an Afrikaner. I'm not. I'm what you would call, I suppose, an Anglo South African, or Anglo, I don't know, Anglo African, I suppose. Because my first language is English. My second language is Afrikaans. Of course, I can speak Afrikaans. My wife, for example, her first language is Afrikaans and her second language is English. Now, that is mainly because of British and Dutch colonial history. So I'm not going to go into the details, but...
I love the history of your area. I'm just studying it now. I find it fascinating.
Well, the Anglo-Boer War is probably, in my view, one of the most interesting wars of the 20th century. It's a significant war for many reasons, because the British and the massive empire that they were thought that they would defeat the Boers. So the word Boer is an Afrikaans word. It means farmer.
Farmer, right.
It quite literally means farmer. What they did was they capitalized the B. So it became more of a cultural thing, rather than just being a farmer. It became part of their identity. So they were known as the Boers, and the word Afrikaner kind of became significant pretty much around, I suppose, the late 1800s. You could probably go back to the mid 1800s, but there was a shift between the sort of ideological worldview of the Boers and then the Afrikaners. It's a little bit complicated, but understand that today the word Boer only really means an ideological positioning, whereas an Afrikaner would be an ethnicity. Now, what happened with the British Empire, and what makes this war so fascinating, is that the British thought that they would wipe out the Boers in about 2 months.
Right.
In less than 2 months, 8 weeks. They thought they would wipe out this very small collection of no longer Dutch, because they'd been here for multiple generations. They had now become African, so to speak.
Right.
And the Boers held them back for over 2 years.
Right.
It's a phenomenal piece of history. I mean, from 2 months to 2 years. And then Winston Churchill was here. He got captured by the Boers and then he escaped. And then the Crown decided to spend a lot more resources by bringing thousands and thousands and thousands of troops down here. And eventually they did beat the Boers, but by sheer numbers and they completely exhausted the Boers. But it's still a great piece of history.
What year was that? What's the name of that war? You call it the English War?
No, that's the Anglo-Boer War. So that would be pretty much at the start of the 1900s.
Okay. Is that where the concentration camp idea started?
Yes. Yes. The British pretty much started the idea of concentration camps and apartheid. It wasn't really the Afrikaners that started all of that.
Yeah, because I heard the guy's name was Lord Kitchener, and I find it funny because we had a city in Canada, or in Ontario, where I live. Ontario is the biggest province in Canada. I'm not sure if you're aware. Forgive me if I simplify everything in Canada.
No, it's fine.
I don't know what you know. But we had a city called New Berlin because there was a large German contingent that came over, I suppose, over the last 150 years. And they settled in a certain area west of Toronto, and they named one town New Berlin. But of course, after Hitler, they decided to start getting rid of all the German names, and they changed it to Kitchener. And I thought, okay, why Kitchener? What does this?
He's worse.
Yeah, exactly. What does this have to do with kitchens? Is this named after a kitchen, or who's Kitchener? So I looked it up. Yeah, the guy, inventor. Mm. He's killed and tortured and concentration guy. I thought, how is this better?
No, his history is terrible. And also Cecil Rhodes. These guys played a very big role. Mm. Of course, I mean, if we want to go into kind of sort of deep state territory, these guys were that without a doubt. I mean, Cecil Rhodes himself, although very influential here in South Africa, he himself, you know, is pretty much one of the founding fathers of the First World War, you know?
Yeah.
But nevertheless, I got sidetracked. I was just quickly, let me just finish that.
You're talking about the Afrikaner and the Boers.
Yeah, so I was just saying, so my lineage is a combination of British and, I suppose, Dutch, but probably more British on my side, although we're talking multiple generations back. So I don't have any British heritage to speak of, really. I mean, I'm very African now, I suppose, six, seven, eight generations. Whereas my wife's lineage is slightly stronger and leans less towards the British and more towards perhaps the Dutch. So that's one of the interesting sort of cultural diversifications that we have here. And also, I don't know if you know this, but in South Africa, English is the fourth largest language. It's the fourth most spoken language. In fact, Afrikaans is more spoken in South Africa than English.
Okay.
It's the third. That makes sense.
Now I'm going to just switch a little bit. At what kind of microphone do you use? Because your sound is excellent. So,
what have I got here? Yeah, sure. SM7B.
SM7B. I'm going to write that down because one of my friends wanted a new microphone, and I have a cheaper one that I bought a long time ago. And I know everyone in the podcast, a lot of people are using Shure's. I know it's a big name. So Shure. Are you using any kind of compression or boost?
I've got a Rodecaster mixing thing here.
You got the Rodecaster. Is that one or two? Is it the new Rodecaster?
I don't know. I bought it recently, so maybe it's the newer one.
Oh, you probably got the newer one. I'm only asking this because I love technical stuff. So do you have many, many audio inputs on that?
No. Yes, I do. I have quite a few.
So you can control their levels?
I can, yes.
Okay, good. That was my next purchase. I've got a Go XLR. This was before I think Rodecaster was really easily available. So that might be my next little toy, is to play with a Rodecaster.
Enjoyed, because initially I had this little this little box booster thing on my desk, and I had to plug in Because this microphone, it doesn't, it's you have to speak like right into it, and it needed some booster extension thing, and I just ended up with more accessories. And then when I bought the Rodecaster, all of that just disappeared. I just plugged it straight in.
Yeah, it's an XLR microphone, so it needs phantom power. It needed power, I suppose. And that's kind of one of the reasons I don't use video, because people don't realize that sound is way more important. And I have to put my face right into the mic in front of a pop filter. Otherwise, my peas will blow out the mic. And there's really no room for a video camera. And
I've got a very big foam thing over my mic, so I can speak into it. And hopefully the P doesn't really come through too much.
No, it's not popping. So I did not have any fuzzy on my microphone. So I bought a pop filter, and that way I can spit into it and make a mess, and it's easy to clean. And you know, half my beard is rubbing off on it as well.
So. I'm not very technical, but yes, what I did. I remember maybe about a year ago, I went into a Joe Rogan video and I looked at what he was using, and I thought, okay, what is he using?
Yeah,
and can I use that?
Yeah.
That's basically what I did, because he's at the top of the game.
Yeah.
So if it's good enough for him, then, you know, and it's not too expensive, then sure, then I'm going to use the same thing.
Yeah. Your audio is fantastic. That's one of the reasons. You see, even if I find someone I really like and his subject matter, if his sound is really bad, I can't listen. I just want, I refuse to torture my ears. So I listen to a lot of audio because I drive for a living. And
drive. What do you do? What do you mean you drive for a living?
I drive a truck.
That is amazing.
Yeah. So this is my part-time job. And you know, kind of ignore my wife because I spent a lot of time on this, but you know, we've been married 32 years. She understands.
I've got to tell you, truck driving it's an amazing thing to witness from this side of the world. I would never recommend being a truck driver on the African continent. It's not the same thing.
I'm sure.
But the one thing that North America has, has got right, I think, is that.
Good
I mean,
roads.
they've made TV shows about it. You know, it's such a cool thing to be a truck driver when you go between states, for example. You know,
yeah, I don't go that far. I'm regional. I just stay around Toronto. You see. When I had children, I said, I want to be around when they're growing up. So I had to make a decision. Do you want to go over the road or stay local? You make less money staying local, but I made a pact. I will be home for dinner every night. I don't care what I have to give up. And a lot of the trucking is overnight, and I won't work at night either. So
you know, it's very dangerous. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I cut off my, well, you fall asleep is the main problem, because a human is not supposed to be up all night. It just doesn't work. So Greg Shant says Kitchener was called Berlin, not New Berlin, and the name was changed circa 1916. Okay. Well, they hated the Germans in 1916 too. So that's.
Imagine being German. You know, like everybody just hates you. Everybody must just hate you like for a century now.
No, I know. And that, you know, I've really got into World War II history and World War I and Germany. Mainly thanks to Netanyahu and what's going on in Gaza. I mean, unfortunately, he's put this on the forefront. So I've been doing deep dives, and I love history now. I wish I took all this history in school, but I don't think it was offered in Canadian schools. So I love all this, and I love that you're getting into it as well. I see. I was just talking about Mark Weber with my special guest last night, and then what pops up? A germ warfare podcast with Mark Weber today on my phone. I thought, wow, that's amazing. So it seems
Mark is great. He's great. And if you really want to get a, I don't know what I'm allowed to say on your podcast.
Anything.
But if you want to start challenging your views on World War II, you want to start breaking apart some narratives. You know, that kind of stuff. You definitely want to talk to people like Mark Weber and of course the related historians, the guys who tend to get censored. That's when you know you should be going in that direction.
Hey, listen, I know I'm with you on this, and I listen to someone, and I'm going to give you some names that I would really love if you got on your show. Because even though I've interviewed some of these people, I always like giving guests that I've had to other podcasters I really enjoy, because I think you would do a great job finding stuff out that I probably couldn't get to. So I have a long list of guys that I would love to see you interview, and I'll talk about them, because I'm deep into the World War II, the Holocaust stuff, because they're using this as a lever to create heresy laws all around the Western world, where we might not even be talking, you know, in 5 years about certain topics, else something bad happens. I don't know if that'll ever come true. Who knows? I mean, just, I've also been listening to a guy named, you probably know, or maybe you don't, named Jan Lemprecht. I think he does a lot of South African history, and he has a, have you heard that name, by the way? He has a site called historyrevision.best, and he has been in trouble, historyreviewed.best, and he has been in trouble with South Africa for a while. So
is he the guy who challenges the concentration camp story?
He basically is, probably, I don't know for sure, but I'm watching a 3-part series that each part is 6 hours on South Africa and Rhodesia. Oh man, I love this stuff. I just assume you might have heard about the guy, because I think he's been arrested a couple times because he is speaking of things that you cannot say, even in South Africa. And he's
his
name is Jan.
Oh, I have been to that website. I have seen it. Yes. Oh, you're pronouncing it differently. That's why I think his name is Jan Lamprecht, but you, I don't think you can do the.
I don't do the. Yeah. I can do the. I'm sorry.
Yes, should I know the website.
Germ warfare. Germ. How can I work that into the?
You got to bring out that. You got to bring out that German sound.
I can't do that. I like that sound, but
the guttural.
Yeah, the guttural, the scraping of the back of the throat. I use that to clear my throat. The but you know, you want it,
well, the French made it sound fancy.
Yeah, exactly. But this guy is, I thought, it sounds like he's hate speech numero uno in South Africa. And I love the history. I just love it. I don't know any of it, but he says certain things just really fiercely. Like, he doesn't seem to like black people. He hates the Jews, and he says it directly. He doesn't imply it. So I struggle with that. I don't know if you'd make it on your podcast, is what I'm saying. But maybe he would.
I struggle. Yeah, I don't mind having him on it at all. But I struggle with the hating a group of people for the accident of their birth. I understand that Jewish history is full of its own sins, and it requires a huge amount of accountability. There's no doubt about that. But I, you know, if you've got a friend who is born a Jew, or a friend who's born black, it's not their fault that they're born like that. They can't help it.
I agree.
So why would you simply hate them for who they are? Shouldn't you hate their ideas? If they've got good ideas, then those ideas surely should overcome the accident of their birth.
I agree. I think you should and you know, even Hitler, he didn't arrest you because you were a Jew. He arrested you because you were a communist.
Exactly. Yeah, he hated the idea. And by the way, Mussolini too.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But that's too complicated for people to understand. It's one extra step, and most people can't make that extra step.
Yeah, well, I mean, Hitler's, I think his dentist or his personal doctor, I forget now who it was a Jew. He didn't hate Jews for being Jews. He hated communism.
Right. And they just happened to have invented communism, according to many people.
Yeah, so Karl Marx was a Jew.
Yeah, so there was an easy selection. There was an easy association for most people. Okay, you're Jewish, that means you're communist. No, but you're right. Lots of Jews were capitalists. They did very well in Germany. And there were tons of Jews in the National Socialist government and infrastructure.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's a whole nother very.
And then, of course, the Bolshevik revolution doesn't really help their cause.
Exactly. But I just love hearing about it. And I have a couple guests that I'd love to see you interview that don't get exposure because of their so-called extreme views. But when you start talking to some of the revisionists, they're extremely reasonable people.
I don't know anybody who's actually an extremist. And it's all, have you noticed? It's always the other person who's an extremist, or it's always the other person who's a radical. It's never you.
I'm not a radical.
and so it's one of those weird kind of relativity issues where people go, oh, that person's too extreme, or that person's too right wing, or that person's too left wing. But talk to that person, and as you say, they actually end up sounding all right for the most part. And you can actually have a conversation, unless they are just completely caught up in ideological indoctrination, then you're going to have a problem. But for the most part, I think people generally can engage in a conversation if you give them a chance.
Absolutely. And that's one thing that you do. You, when you let your guest talk, and I think, is Germ still there? Did he fall asleep? I haven't heard from him in 25 minutes. Is that something you do deliberately, or are you just fascinated with their stories and just don't have anything to add?
I don't know. I think that's an interesting question. I do generally invite guests who I think are interesting. I mean, I've had conversations that I've ended up finding very boring, and I've really struggled my way through. But something that my parents taught me when I was growing up was, you know, everybody thinks that they're right, or they know the best solution or the best answer, or they've got the best worldview.
Yeah.
And so how do you learn something if you just barge in the whole time and you don't give them a chance? Because the guest is being invited onto my show, so therefore he must be given an opportunity to present his idea. Mm-hmm. And I need to listen to his idea and try my very best to understand it as much as possible, because it might actually be better than my own idea.
Yeah.
It's not about, I don't really believe in getting into bar fights. You know, I mean, there's no point, because then you'll just, you know, press end and then disappear, and then who wins in the end?
Yeah.
For me, a winning conversation is allowing him to present his idea to the fullest. And then I'll go away and think about it, and my guests will go away and think about it. Oh, sorry, my audience will go away and think about it. And then you can engage in the battle of ideas after that. But you can't engage in the battle of ideas if you don't know what the idea is. So I think, to answer your question in a less sloppy way, I do try and get myself immersed into what they're saying. And I genuinely try and understand it. And for the most part, I do find it very fascinating.
Yeah, because I get accused of interrupting my guests all the time. And I only interrupt them because they'll say something, and if I don't ask them right then and there, it'll go away out of my mind and I'll never get back to it. So I only do it as a memory crutch, unless I write it down. And then when I write it down, I read my notes. I said, why did I write this down? I don't even remember what the context was. So that's the only reason I ask right away, because otherwise, you know, as you get older, you forget stuff.
Well, so what I do is I make notes. So I'll have like my notepad open, and I know that if I want to ask a question, I'll just quickly write down something quickly, and then I'll come back to it later if it's necessary. But for the most part, if you just listen, you can learn a lot. Who was it now? Was it Stephen Covey? He wrote the book 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. It's one of my favorite books.
Okay.
And he, in the book, he said, first understand before being understood. And that's something that I also learned from Peter Boghossian, who I interviewed, I think, way back in 2019. He was a Portland University professor. And he was part of the, I forget the name now, but he and James Lindsay and Helen Pluckrose, they basically trolled the entire peer review system, and they wrote a whole bunch of papers that were complete garbage, and a very, very funny prank. And they got peer reviewed and they got published. But how they did it was they used all the language of the, you know, that worked for peer review, just to show how broken the system is. And then he wrote a book called How to Have Impossible Conversations. And that book blew my mind. It completely changed the way in which I engage with people.
How to have impossible conversations.
It's an orange book. You can't miss it. It's on Amazon or wherever else you want to buy books from.
Any points in there that I could use? Can you think of a couple or one point? What?
Yeah, it's basically the Socratic method. So, you know, he goes all the way back to Socrates and what it means to have a conversation, what knowledge is. It's very sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Epistemological. It's all about understanding the other person. It's about asking questions rather than throwing your opinion. Right. Because yeah. You have to decide. Okay, so Peter said to me, and he kind of mentored me a little bit. And I mean, ideologically or politically, we differ very much. Mm-hmm. But yet I found him so invigorating. And he said to me, one of the things you must decide before you do a podcast, for example, is what is the goal of this particular conversation? What are you aiming to achieve? That is something that stuck with me. Because, for example, I interviewed the Church of Satan. Anton LaVey's Church of Satan, or at least one of the high priests.
Okay.
And then I also interviewed the polar opposite, those guys, what are they called? Westboro Baptist Church.
Oh, you got one of them on? I thought that was a CIA front.
No, I got on one of the pastors, one of the head pastors. And
okay.
And I said to Peter both times, I said, all right, so how do I engage in this conversation? And he said, well, what is it that you want to gain or achieve from this?
Yeah.
And I said, well, I'm obviously not going to change their mind. He said, no, you're not going to do that in 1 hour. Okay. So then you go in with a different strategy. And the strategy here is to basically learn what they're actually about. Give them a chance. Stop listening to what CNN says or what Fox says and just listen to them. You know, get the horse's mouth. Let them explain their position and so that you can understand it. And that for me was mind-blowing because I had the best conversation with both the Church of Satan and Westboro Baptist Church. And I never thought the day would come when I'd say that, but it was phenomenal. I really, really enjoyed both conversations.
Yeah. Those are the guys that have the protest, God Hates Fags, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Them. Yeah.
Do they still and hate yet, fags or what?
And yet if you listen to if you actually listen to the conversation and you listen to their reasoning, you go away thinking, these guys actually do make a strong point. You don't have to agree with it, but they can argue their point really, really well. I mean, if they were a CIA front, they're not a very good one at that. I mean, what, they're all of what, 75 people in a church.
Okay.
And they don't they don't really do very much other than holding up placards saying that God hates everybody. I'm not quite sure then what the CIA would achieve through them.
I think it was just an agitation group that they really believe what they're saying, I guess, is what you're saying.
Yeah, so they do. Definitely.
Because I think a lot of the agitations begin with the intelligence agencies. They're just doing that to set up a dialectic. And I think I've heard you talk about that with different guests where they create the thesis, the antithesis, so they can settle for the synthesis. So they control both sides because they know where they want the conversation to end. So they have both extremes. So I figured that they were, and maybe it's still possible that this extremely hateful bunch of people is just meant to bring in some kind of hate law system.
But the irony is that they're not hateful. That's what I got out of it. It's a paradox. They're not actually hateful. Okay. They're trying to make a very, very orthodox Christian claim. And that's what I'm saying, that if you give them a chance and you listen to the conversation, it really is very interesting. For example, I had a similar view on Satanism, and I'm referring to Anton LaVey's version of Satanism.
Okay.
I'm in no way an advocate of Satanism at all. And I mean that in the sort of LaVeyan, whatever you call it, that type of satanic church thing. And by the way, he himself was a Jew.
No doubt, because aren't they some of the bigger atheists?
Yeah, but The guy that I spoke to, he was a high priest or whatever you call it. I don't know what they're called. I forget now. Deacon of some sort.
Okay.
A demon, really, really great conversation. Down to earth, logical, funny, all that sort of thing. I don't agree with his sort of moral positioning on things. Like, you know, he supports pornography and all that kind of thing. And I don't.
Right.
But I could easily go and have a beer with him after that chat, because I gave him a chance to speak. I was expecting, you know, blood and sacrificial ram's heads and, you know, and pentagrams and stuff. And it wasn't like that at all. That's just symbolic. It's the same thing, I guess, if you talk to a Catholic, you know, you think of all these sort of symbolisms and things get conjured up, and, you know, and probably correctly so. But some of the people who are Catholic are decent people. And this particular guy I interviewed from the Church of Satan, he struck me as a very decent guy, as did the guy from the Westboro Baptist Church. it's weird hearing myself saying that, but you know, I'm being honest. I only know
what the mainstream gave me, and I'd love to get to listen to your interview with them. So anything you can think of, maybe I'll write it down and I'll look for it myself. So let me write Germ and Westboro Baptist.
It's a very old conversation. I think I had a very crappy microphone and a crappy camera at the time. But it was still nonetheless a great conversation, you know. And they emailed me afterwards and they said, you know, thank you. You know, whenever we do interviews with the media, they don't give us more than 7 minutes, and they shut us down very quickly, and we're never able to give our case. And we really appreciated the fact that you allowed us to give our case, and we'll happily come back on in the future.
Are all your archives available for free, or how do we get them?
Okay. Everything's free, excepting the most recent stuff.
Okay. What is your paywall model? How does your website work? So go ahead.
Well, look, I'm actually a professional cartoonist of almost 2 decades. I've got books published. I've won all of South Africa's biggest awards.
Wow. That's love sort of cartoonists. Thing. You know, when I read the newspaper, I always went to the editorial cartoon. We had one of the best ones in Toronto, maybe in the world. Well, maybe not the world, but his name was Andy Donato. Oh, he was so bang on political cartoons. It's amazing how you can compress an idea into a picture and say everything.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So that was the point. So I've always been, you know, I mean, if you look at my studio, I'm surrounded by comics and cartoons and all that sort of thing. I've loved comics and cartoons. When I say comics, I don't mean superhero stuff. I've never been into Marvel and DC and that sort of thing. I've been into proper old school cartoons.
I like Tintin.
Yeah. I like Tintin and Asterix and Garfield and all the stuff of the 70s, Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, Pink Panther. You know, and because I have been fired just about by every publication I've ever worked for, I kind of burnt my bridges all over the place, and so I had to start.
You're too controversial,
I suppose, and I had to start finding new outlets. And of course, the internet became very helpful in that sense, and I realized that I didn't need a newspaper or an editor. I could publish myself and have people. You know, support my work that way. And then, of course, when I combine that with a podcast, which is just basically an extension of that, it's all about ideas, talking about ideas and challenging established ideas and conventional ideas, and perhaps breaking free of narratives that we're fed for our whole lives. COVID, I think, is an amazing opportunity for people to shift their worldview on so many things.
And then,
now to answer your question, in order for me to make an income, I needed to find a way to monetize what it is that I've been doing. And I found that if people like what I do, then they'll pay. Yeah. But at the same time, I also want all my stuff to be freely available. So I figured out that I would just have, you know, early access for a lot of my stuff. And if you get FOMO, you know, then you become a member, or you just wait a few weeks and then it becomes public. So everything that I do is pretty much public, other than the most recent stuff. And if you're happy to wait a few weeks, well, then that's fine. But, you know, everybody has to make a living. And because I'm a cartoonist, I'm at the bottom of the food tray, you know. Nobody, I'm, you know, you're a truck driver. People actually need stuff that gets moved around in trucks. People don't actually need cartoons. So no, I have to make an argument for why people should give me money. And amazingly people do, you know, if you have integrity, which I've tried my very best to maintain, people see that and they're happy to contribute towards that. And so that's kind of been my very hack job, business model.
Yeah. I gave you a few bucks. So I think I think I got your attention.
Thank you.
You wrote back. Yeah, you did. That's why I thought, because I was thinking I'd like to get this guy on, but I don't really see an angle because you know, sometimes I do. Yeah. So I sent you a few bucks because I thought you, because I said, listen, I'm consuming your content and I'm of the value for value model, which was
thank you.
Adam Curry.
Yeah. I do try and personally reply to everybody. So, I don't have any kind of automated replies.
No, I could tell. I know it was personal. Mm. And so the value for value model, real quick, is what Adam Curry came up with of the No Agenda Show. It's a really good podcast.
Yeah, he's great.
And you pay what you think the show is worth to you. So if you are a little consumer where you just take little bites, okay, that's one thing. If you spend all your time and download all your stuff, well, that should be worth more. And you just value it based on... So I really like that model, and that's my model. Now, I don't think I could necessarily make a living off it because maybe my topics are not broad enough, but I make some pretty good, you know, some funny money.
It's funny you say topics not broad enough. I mean, because I have been a cartoonist pretty much my whole life, I've covered a lot of talking points and a lot of topics, and I genuinely am interested in a very wide range of things. I'm interested in whether or not... for example, Earth is flat or round, or if NASA is fake, or if there are aliens or UFOs. I am so sorry. I think my dog is barking and is coming through my microphone.
I think an alien just landed in your backyard and the dog is going insane.
And
Last day we had fireworks on the show.
And I'm interested in everything, like, you know, if stars are real, how far away are they? You know, everything, whether or not we... if Christianity is real, or if Christianity is a big psyop, or if Jesus was real, or if Buddha was real, or if Muhammad was real, you know, for me, there's no holy cow. I'll talk about absolutely anything and I'll try my very best not to get offended. The only time I really get offended is if it gets too personal, you know, you start going after my family, then, I mean, that's generally just for me taboo. I don't understand why you would do that. But any topic just about for me is good because knowledge is power. And so I'm fascinated in so many different things. And so some people think that I try and cover a lot of topics because that's a way to make an income, but it really isn't. It's just something that I find interesting. I read a lot of different books and a lot of different articles, all sorts of things, you know. Pyramids, like how were they built, you know, and were they underwater, and were they even built by the Egyptians, you know, and exactly. Or Atlantis, was it legit, was it real, you know, that sort of thing. So all of these things make up how the puzzle fits together.
I agree.
And by the way, that cartoon that you had in front of you a moment ago with the mousetrap.
Yes, that was a good one.
That I drew that I think it's that cartoon. I drew that on an airplane flight between South Africa and the Netherlands.
Oh, nice. Is there an easy way to scroll through your cartoons? That's what I'm struggling with. I just want to click, 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 click. I want to see the next one and the next one. Is there a way to do that?
No. That unfortunately is so my website should be a lot better than what it is.
Because you have so much content, I want to I just want to press the right arrow and just go bang bang bang.
Okay, I'm gonna make a note of that.
Can you add that for next show? Because it's so important. You have so much good stuff here. I love cartoons and cartoonists. Do cartoonists still make money from newspaper organizations, or is that gone?
It's dying. It's becoming niche.
Because I don't buy, I used to consume newspapers voraciously, but that was 20 years ago. And I always went to the editorial cartoon first, then I read the editorial, and then I just sort of went around to the columnists, and that was pretty much it. So the point is, Toronto had at least three, maybe six really top editorial cartoonists. But I don't, there are no newspapers anymore that are delivered in Toronto. There are no newspaper boxes. I don't really go online anymore for their.
Yeah,
for
the problem content. Also is that they're all establishment. I mean, COVID was such an eye-opener. I mean, we saw how musicians who we thought were anti-establishment became pro-establishment, and the same thing with cartoonists.
Yeah, like rage against the machine. No, I think they rage for the machine.
Yeah, exactly, you know. And American Idiot, or is it Green Day?
Yeah.
You know, and so cartoonists very much fell into the same category. Most of them became sort of establishment hacks. And very few of us, I mean, I lost all my income pretty much in 2020. You know, I didn't want to do what the newspapers were wanting. You know, they were all siding with the lockdowns and the mandates and all that nonsense. And
Was that piece work? Did you submit art and they paid you? Is that how it worked? You weren't on salary at a newspaper?
I was.
You were? Okay.
Yeah, I was. There was a very big newspaper I was drawing for in 2020. Okay. And they phoned me up and they said, look, we got to let you go. Your views on COVID are two different
But from that's ours. That's an editorialist's job, is to make people angry. You're supposed to provoke. I'm supposed to write in and complain about the editorial or the editorial cartoonist. What's wrong with these people? Isn't that what you're supposed to do? You're supposed to push the envelope.
No, but they've become mouthpieces for the establishment.
Mm. It says it's signed Solari. Is that you? Or because this is, I see JR. This is the signature, I think.
Germ.
Okay.
All right. Okay. So yes. Okay. So what happens is this. I have people who fund me to draw cartoons, right? And then,
okay.
So in other words, I've got my membership model, and then I've got people who want to give me extra for drawing cartoons, for example, right? Or they want my cartoons to appear on their website or in their newsletter or whatever. So that's what happens when you see the name there.
So this guy commissioned this.
Yes.
How much?
That's actually Catherine Austin Fitz's website, by the way.
That's what I thought. I knew that name, but I couldn't.
Yeah, she commissions quite a number of cartoons from me, and I've got a really, really great relationship with Catherine. In fact, I met her when I was in Holland.
How much would that cost, or is it just on individual negotiations?
Individual negotiation. I'm not gonna give away numbers.
What does this say? Foodforabundance.com. Okay.
Yes.
So if
foodforestabundance.com. So they're all about permaculture and growing your own food and getting off, as Catherine would say, getting off the control grid, you know, going away from franchised food, box food, that sort of thing, and actually supporting your local farmer.
I gotcha. This is a great cartoon. All your cartoons are great. This is. Do you have a certain style? For instance, will you always draw a person with this kind of head? That kind of thing, or do you really mix it up?
I love that question. That question.
Because I don't know. I haven't seen all your art. That's why I'm asking.
It's a great question, and I really, really appreciate you asking, because most people don't ask that kind of detail. I get bored of my own work. I almost never look at my own work going back in time. I cringe. I look at it. I go, oh my word! I shouldn't have drawn that.
Or, you're your own worst critic.
Yeah. I mean, I've got my own books, and I don't look at them at all. And also, I don't hold the same views anymore as most of my cartoons that I drew years ago. So what you're seeing on my website is, I'm busy building an archive. I don't think my work goes further back than 2020, really. And the irony is that my work goes all the way back to 2005. I mean, I've published probably around 7,000 or 8,000 cartoons, and there's not nearly that many on my website. And the reason for that is because I'm slowly building an archive, and I'm curating them, because a lot of the stuff I'm just ashamed of. Even though I published it in books and all that sort of thing, I'm not trying to hide it or anything, but I'm first putting up the best, what I think is the best, on my website, and I'm going backwards. And my style has changed. My style's changed a lot over the years. Sorry, say that again.
And so have your views. You're growing up.
Yeah.
You're going from socialism to conservatism, and when you have a child, you'll be even worse.
Yeah, I mean, I was very much a libertarian sort of anarchist for years, and I'm not. I don't hold those views, or I hold some of those views, but not many of them anymore. And mainly because I suppose I've become very much driven by the idea of family and community, and not so much me, I, but you know, my family kind of thing, you know. And I'm not
everyone should have a child by the time they're 25 max, yeah. Because you give up any narcissistic tendencies.
Correct.
Because guess what? That person that you just made depends on you explicitly, completely, and you don't have time for yourself. It's just
exactly right. And as you know, my I've got a son coming, and I'm, you know, my worldview is dramatically changing as a result. You know,
right now
the most important person in my life is not me. It's my wife and my child inside of her. You know. And I'll take a bullet for them, you know, and that's not a narcissistic thing, you know.
Your wife will forget your name when the child's born.
Probably.
You know, hey, I'm over here. Remember me? We used to have fun together.
I put
that child down for 5 minutes.
But yeah, I mean, so I mean, I don't slot into an ideological worldview anymore. I mean, I hold conservative views, I guess. I hold libertarian views, I guess. I hold communist views, I guess. I mean, if I'm at home, you know, I'm certainly a communist at home. I mean, I share everything, you know, and I'm also a totalitarian.
You're a benevolent dictator. You're Mussolini, you're Hitler. Actually, your wife will probably run everything. You're going to be just running around for her. Get me this, get me that, massage my feet.
That's the thing that people always forget, though, that women actually have way more power than men. I mean, you never hear of the wife sleeping on the couch. It's always the husband.
Right. And the wife always gets the house after the divorce. Why is that?
Yes. And the husband only ever gets like one bedroom or one small section of the bedroom. You know, she gets the whole house.
Right. Yeah. It's crazy.
Hence the term man cave.
Yeah. So I see some of your imagery has changed, and I don't know when this was. I guess the date is on here, 7/23. Do you put the year on it? Oh, that is July 23rd.
Yeah.
2020.
No, I think I still draw like that. I mean, I think it takes a few years of evolving. I mean, if you go back to my work from, say, 2017 or 2019 even, there is a considerable difference. 2005, 2007, you know, you won't even think it's me. But one of the things that I try and do with my cartoon work is I try and keep things as simplistic, as minimalist, and as loose as possible. I don't like getting into, you know, unless the idea calls for it. I try to avoid highly complicated, you know, masterpieces that take 3 weeks to draw. For me, a cartoon is meant to be a sort of fast, loose idea that I've now put down onto paper, as it were. Well, I mean, digital paper, so to speak.
I love how when you hover over it, it turns to color. Did you do that on purpose?
Yes.
That's really cool. So do you actually add the color, or is there some AI that just helps colorize it?
I think it's just the website that does it. The website's got some sort of filter on it that makes everything black and white.
Until you hover over it. So it's originally color.
No, I don't draw in black and white. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Right. That's cool. Arman is already saying, let your guest conclude his train of thought. I'm sorry. I'm just so excited to ask the next question, because we've been going an hour, and I know I'm totally running out of time. I totally have.
We can probably do another 15, 20 minutes.
All right. Maybe we'll have to go fast. Do you have a favorite cartoonist?
Yes. By the way, I will say this right now. I'm enjoying the conversation so much that I'll happily come on for round two if you want.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Do a second round. So you know.
Well, I need a South African correspondent. I don't have anyone over there, and I'm just deep diving into it. I mean, I want to know what's happening in South Africa. We haven't even talked because.
Well, you know, I love living in South Africa. I suppose everybody loves where they live. You know, South Africa, most people will know it's got a very dark history. We've got a huge amount of problems. One of the most pragmatic problems is electricity. We have constant rolling blackouts, sometimes 8 hours a day. But yet I still won't immigrate. I love living here. There's something about living here that is, it just makes me feel at home. I know that we are very behind on the sort of globalist agenda in many ways, and that's also a great thing because 15-minute cities cannot happen here. You know, it's just not possible to happen in South Africa. The infrastructure doesn't allow for it. Electric cars don't really work well because we have rolling blackouts. So how do you charge them? We had the lowest vaccine uptake in the world because the population is deeply, deeply skeptical and suspicious of the government. And of course, dare I say it, white people because of the apartheid. And they go, well, hang on, you got pharmaceutical companies coming in, they're all white and they want to give us injections. No, we're not going to do it. And in a weird way, I found that a great blessing, you know. I mean, last week I was in China and, I got back a few days ago and, it's an incredible place to be, right? It's absolutely incredible. And it's nothing what you're told it is. Yet I still want to come back to where everything's broken. I don't know. I can't explain it. I think the best way to describe it is the following. I would much rather have a failed state in which the authorities are too inept and too useless to actually control us properly. I have expat friends who moved from South Africa to Canada, and they really don't want to be there anymore. They've been there for a decade, and they want to move back to South Africa because they find everything is too efficient. You know, the government is too good at everything. it's much better being in a system where, you know, I've got 20 speeding fines, for example, and the system's so broken that they don't even know if I paid them or not.
Yeah, that's amazing.
You know, and I'd much rather have a fully broken system and, dare I say it, beautiful, beautiful landscapes and wildlife.
Are you not I get the impression that you should be afraid for your life because you're white and there are blacks all around you.
Yeah, but that's propaganda. No, that's propaganda. I mean, racial tension is a real thing. Yes, we have we have white farmers being killed and tortured, and that is a real thing. And by the way, I don't think that is domestic. I think that is funded internationally. I can guarantee you, as I'm sitting and talking to you, there are foreign globalist interests, probably linked to Soros, probably linked to CIA. That kind of thing, that are designed to create unrest, civil unrest, fear, all these sorts of things. I don't think the average black South African hates the average white South African. They don't. I live here. I can tell you that. Mm-hmm. But once you get into the higher levels of authority, of government, and of the corporate structure, you know, Bill Gates spends a lot of time and money here, for example. Once you start getting to those facilities and those areas of the hierarchy, you start seeing that is where the disruption comes from. That is where the hatred comes from. That is where the conflict comes from. The average people, black and white, just want to get on with their lives. If you just leave them alone, they get on fine. And that's why I love living here, because I don't encounter that kind of hatred that you see in the media. The only time you see that is probably in the farms, and of course in the actual cities. But which city in the world is not dangerous? I mean, New York is very dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think Toronto's dangerous, but I don't go downtown much. But no, my children go down there. They hang out a lot, and it's extremely multicultural. But that's fine.
Look, to be fair, multiculturalism is a grand failure. I don't support it. I think South Africa would be better off balkanized, right? I think that splitting South Africa into a whole pile of different countries is probably a good idea. Wow. I support secession pretty much anywhere. If Texas wants to secede, I support it. Okay. I'm not a fan of centralization. I think decentralization is always superior.
Yeah, I agree.
But having said that, if you don't impose all sorts of frustrations and laws and rules from the top down, people generally get on fine. But because of all that sort of top down imposition, you end up with so much conflict. I mean, who created apartheid? It wasn't the people on the ground. It was the people above. You know, it was the British Empire mixed with the American Empire mixed with, you know, the ruling elites.
I was going to ask. So wasn't the Afrikaners? They didn't
For sure. Yeah. But I mean, it's a long, complicated history.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of that didn't turn out the way that they had originally, you know, planned. The whole thing kind of just devolved. But I mean, the point that I'm making is, it is dangerous. Of course, South Africa is far more dangerous on average than most other countries. But it also isn't. You just kind of have to know your way around. If you're a foreigner and you come and visit and you think you know how the country works, you're going to get robbed. You might get knifed and at worst get shot.
But now you're down here on the cities. Bottom left, right? You're in Cape Town on the map?
I'm right at the bottom left. Yes, right at the very bottom left.
Now, but Cape Town is a long way from Johannesburg. Now, Johannesburg is probably, it's the capital, or Pretoria is the capital.
Pretoria is the capital.
So that seems sort of like a suburb of Johannesburg.
And I'll be there next week. I'll be in Johannesburg the end of next week. I go there quite often.
So that's a long way away. So you might be in a safe area down in Cape Town, is what I'm trying to say. But over here, it's a long way away.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny when you look at the map like that. It creates a very different image. I mean, Johannesburg and Cape Town are only a 2-hour flight apart, about maybe 1,800 kilometers. I don't know what you Canadians, what do you use? Use kilometers or miles?
Yeah, we use kilometers.
Okay, so it's a Okay, so it's about 1,800 kilometers if you drive.
So it's 18-hour drive, I guess, or no?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. About an 18-hour drive, and we do that drive quite often because it's actually really nice. Most of that, what you're seeing on that map there, most of that area between Cape Town and Johannesburg is open. Very few built up areas. It's mostly farmland, and it's very, very empty, extremely empty. We drove last year. If you move across to the top left of the country, sort of where Namibia is, kind of right there. Okay, so you see where that line goes dead straight upwards.
Okay, here
to the right hand side. Go more to the right. The border of Namibia. You'll see it goes directly upwards.
Okay, is it more, this one
more,
here?
No. The red line that goes.
The dividing line.
Yeah, there. So we were just there last year. We were in a game park. We went camping. Okay. We drove there, and we drove from there all the way down to Cape Town at the bottom left. We drove probably for 3 hours, and saw a grand total of one car.
Oh, what if you got stuck and ran out of gas? What the hell would you do then?
Well, then you have to, you know, then you have to phone or something.
Look at this terrain here. Well, yeah, it's like scrub. It's scrub land, isn't it?
But it's absolutely beautiful.
Where's McDonald's? What if you need a drink? Where's the gas station?
No, they've got towns. They've got towns. Okay. They've got towns in between with shops and that sort of thing. So, you know, you're always at least 2 hours or 2.5 hours or 3 hours away from a little town.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's for me. See, now that's why I wouldn't want to stay in China, because you don't get that. It's just too busy. It's too built up.
There's no breaks. Yeah.
Yeah. This is what I enjoy. And of course, I myself, I go hunting. And so we've got lots of hunting areas in the country. It's great. Yeah. It's great to be able to own guns and shoot guns and that sort of thing.
What kind of game do you go after?
Generally I hunt what I can eat. Bring back home. So, I mean, I'm not one of those hunters. I'm not a trophy hunter. I don't go just shoot animals because I think it's great. I actually don't like shooting animals. So I try and shoot buck,
wild
or antelope that I can eat.
An antelope? Whoa! So you need a big, you need a pickup truck for that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, I've got a 308, which is a very nice hunting caliber.
No, nice.
Yeah, and you definitely need a pickup truck. You can't carry that on your own.
Well, so you're not afraid, is what you're saying. You're not afraid driving.
No,
being
no,
ambushed.
Because,
okay, there's no roving gangs of blacks.
It's not like you see in the media.
so they wouldn't hunt you. So they're not out hunting you. Oh, there's a couple of Cape Towners. Nah. Let's grab them. Dinner.
It is more dangerous. It is more dangerous if you go into the cities like Johannesburg or something, and you go into the actual city center itself. But you'll find that in a lot of other cities.
Honestly, my knowledge and a lot of North Americans' knowledge about Africa is just Looney Tunes level, where we see them cooking their neighbor in a big pot. And our Jewish first mayor of Toronto made a little sort of cartoon joke about Africa, where they said, "Oh, they boiled the people." Oh, he got in so much trouble. I bet you could look up a cartoon on that or 50 where he just got attacked. So,
well,
people's perception, honestly.
Yeah, it is perception. I mean, for example, I'm talking to you now. I'm in Africa, but I've just done a speed test. My connection at the moment is 937 megabits per second. That's pretty fast.
It's almost 1 gig. Is that up or down or both?
That's down.
Yeah, I think we just got fiber in my neighborhood. So we were crawling along just until last year. So I finally have 1 gig up and 1 gig down as well. So
yeah, I've got pretty much 1 gig up, 1 gig down. I mean, and that's not bad for living in Africa.
That's awesome. Well, you're in a city though, and Cape Town is a very important city, I believe.
It's extremely important, and it's very beautiful also. I highly recommend people break, you know, so that's what I do. Okay, the battle of ideas, it's breaking perceptions, breaking narratives, trying to find the truth, and also putting together the puzzle of how the world works.
Yeah.
And in the same way that I think the West has a very, very a very blurry idea of the East. In the same way, I think the West also has a very blurry idea of Africa. I would strongly suggest people come to South Africa, visit Cape Town, and certainly go to the Kruger National Park, which is at the top right of the country. It's one of the biggest game parks in the world. There it is. Yeah. And
can you hunt an elephant there?
You can absolutely not hunt there at all. that park right there is about the size of Israel.
Wow.
I'm sure somebody can correct me, but I think it's more or less the size of Yellowstone also. So it's a very, very, very big game park. It is highly significant. It's about 100 years old. It's a proper game park. So, you know, it's you can stay in it. You can camp in it. We're going there in 2 weeks' time, my wife. That's why we're going up to Johannesburg, because we're going to visit some family, and then we're going to drive on. And we're going to go stay in the Kruger National Park for about 10 days. And we go there every year or every 2 years just because it's so beautiful. It's absolutely incredible. You see the biggest animals in your life right next to you, you know, lions. We were surrounded by about 16 lions the last time we were there.
Jeez, you're not afraid.
Well, no, you're in your car.
Yeah, just, I know. Windows up.
No, my windows were down because they don't just randomly attack. Unless you stick your arm out and they, you know, get inquisitive. But, you know, elephants are way more dangerous than lions. Particularly if it's a mother with a child, then you don't go near, because then they could throw the car right over. And then you're in all sorts of trouble. And by and large, you're very safe if you just kind of follow the rules. But it's just an incredibly beautiful experience. You know, this is why I like living here. I just enjoy, you know, the sunshine. We don't have too many chemtrails. I know that there's a lot of that in Europe, for example. We don't have a lot of that. We are very behind, you know. Most of the world doesn't even know where we are. I mean, I spoke to an American once, He asked me, he says, where are you from? I said, South Africa. He says, where in Africa is that? Well, I said, well, it's in the north.
Well, I usually ask
I mean, think about it, right?
Yeah, like, I know, it's funny.
Our country is the most literal country on earth. It literally tells you where it is.
By the way, where is Southwest Africa again?
Namibia.
I know. I wish they would have left that one because I don't know where the hell Namibia is. But man, Southwest Africa, I can find it every time. I'm sure
Angelina Jolie knows where it is because she went and adopted half of the country's kids.
Oh, nice. Yeah, how generous. And she had her boob cut off. Get yours cut off on sale next week. I highly suggest it. That's a great idea, Angelina. This is our African lion safari on terrible. It's a couple highways and they've got some lions and monkeys shitting all over your car. I mean, that's ours. You can see here in the picture. So what you're talking about is a little bigger, but there's a lot of animal activists that want to shut these things down.
I mean, keep in mind that I talk very fondly of these things, but that's also because we have very little going for us here on the African continent, like really have very little going for us. So those few things that we have going for us, I like to celebrate.
Well,
Trump wasn't wrong when he said Africa's a shithole.
Yeah, but look how big Africa is. Africa's not even properly represented on the map, apparently. If you actually, it looks pretty good here. So it looks, because they said it's underrepresented, but on this map, it's definitely bigger in South America. At least
it's very, very big. You know, when I flew back from China, I first went to Dubai. So if you look at where Dubai is, the plane has to fly all the way down to Cape Town, right? It was a direct flight.
Right.
That length is unbelievably long. I think it's 8 hours or something like that, 8 or 9 hours. Okay. It is a long, long distance from the top to the bottom.
Wait, why wouldn't you just go here on this straight line? Why wouldn't you go right over the Indian Ocean?
Well, because they fly they fly along the coastline. I think because they're a bit nervous because some rogue African country might try and shoot down the plane.
Right, yeah. Those guys with those guns in Yemen, they'll take you out, right?
Yeah, no. So,
yeah,
we'd rather stay on the coastline.
I think that actually, well, I was just kind of making a jab about the shape of the earth because there are a lot of people saying you cannot go from South Africa to Australia here in a straight line. But they say you got to go up here first.
No, I did it. I flew to Sydney direct.
And it went straight over.
Yeah, it went straight over Madagascar and all the way right across. Well, actually, okay, let me be more accurate.
Okay.
The flight path.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to get into the flat earth thing because I don't really know. I'm not going to die on that hill.
I don't either. I'm just joking because I don't know.
I absolutely love the conversation. Make no mistake. I love chatting about it. But let me tell you the flight path. So we went downwards, not in a straight line, downwards, and we went underneath Australia and went upwards to Sydney, if that makes sense.
So you sort of went towards Antarctica?
Very, very far south, yes, and then upwards towards and the reason for that is apparently it's quicker.
Well, it's supposed to be a great circle if the earth is a sphere, so you're following the shortest path, which is
the shortest path, correct?
And
I looked out the window and I could see the ice. That's how far down we went. I saw the ice. We flew along that coastline of the Antarctic for maybe about 2 hours. And the pilot actually No. We're just touching the ice wall. The pilot still said to us, if you have a look out the window, you'll see endless amounts of ice. And that's exactly what I saw out the window because it was a daytime flight. And then the plane went upwards towards Sydney. So we didn't go over Australia. So we didn't go in a straight line, but we certainly didn't go via India or whatever.
Did they have one of those maps on the back of the front seat where you could watch the plane?
I flew Qantas.
Wow. Okay. Well, you're just blowing myths all over the place. I would just be worried going this direction. Where's the emergency landing area?
There is no emergency landing.
Okay, here you are. Here's a little island here. What's this? The French South and Antarctic Islands.
You just crash, baby. There? You just crash, baby. If that thing goes down, it is just ocean the entire way.
Oh my gardens. Yeah. Okay. Well, there's somebody down here. I didn't even know these islands existed. Look at that. I'm learning as we go along.
But yeah, I mean, I still took a photograph. So I've actually got a photograph.
Your site?
No, not on my website. But I took a photograph of the screen in front of me, just to show where the flight path was at the, you know, it shows a little airplane on the map and everything.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
When I looked out the window, I saw ice for a very long time.
Okay. Well, all right. Well, so much for that theory. I know there are people that say that flight doesn't exist, but you're saying it does. So
I literally flew it. I flew direct, and then I flew back exactly the same flight back. So the plane took off from Sydney, went downwards, went underneath Australia, and then went down towards the Antarctic, and went all the way towards Africa, and then went upwards.
Absolutely,
because it's the shortest path. That's why.
Yeah, it's the Great Circle. Mm. Yeah, I don't know either. I just know that they lie to us about NASA and all that.
Yes.
So why are they lying? What is the purpose? And do you get into that too on your podcast?
I do. I've had a few conversations about it. Look,
you can talk about it. You'll go anywhere, won't you?
It's an absolutely wonderful topic because it makes me think. No, you know what I like about it?
Yeah.
It forces me to hold up a mirror.
Yeah. So, and ask the question: why do you know what you know,
or why do I believe what I believe, and how can I possibly explain my position if it's all I've ever known and I've never questioned it? So,
awesome.
So what I love about these conversations is that, I mean, my wife and I, we go away every few weeks just for maybe one or two nights. We try and go into like the bush somewhere, or
that's amazing,
or like a little.
How long have you been married?
It's 5 years.
Okay, so it's still exciting. Good.
It's still exciting. Yes, yeah. and we'll sit in a hot tub, because we always try and find places with sort of wood fired hot tubs, and we'll sit outside because there's nobody around, and we'll look up at the stars at night, and you know, we'll sometimes ask the question, you know, what's happening up there, you know?
Nice.
And that's
the Southern Cross. Do you see that?
Yes, we do see that. Yes, I don't think you do.
No, I was going to ask. I hope you don't see the North Star.
No.
That would be a problem.
But in any event, you know, that's what these conversations have done. They've allowed me the opportunity to kind of hold up a mirror at what I think I know. And it makes me question. And if someone says, why do you believe Earth is a spinning sphere? I still can't answer that because I can't prove it. That's the honest truth. But I find the flat Earth argument just simply it's too big of a paradigm shift. It requires too many puzzle pieces to fit in very neatly that I don't think would normally fit neatly. It's just too big of a paradigm shift, and also. It does appear to me that if, you know, Earth is what it, you know, what the conventional argument is, that we are, you know, a spinning sphere, mm-hmm. spinning sphere. Try and say that a few times fast.
Won't even dare.
It does create also, like, if you think about it too long, you can end up, you know, taking antidepressants, you know, and you end up in a crazy house or whatever, because it's too vast and too big. And I think. In many ways, it's more comforting to think that it's not like that.
Yeah, it was a lot of people think it's a psychological operation that was just launched in 2015 to get people off the topic of questioning NASA. So if they could attach this craziness to questioning NASA, regular people would walk away. So there are many people that talk about that. But there's other people saying that I have many regular guests that say nowhere in engineering do they take into account any kind of curve.
Yes. Yes, I've seen that also.
So there's
that is true.
So the problem is maybe we're given a false choice. Maybe there's a third choice or a fourth choice or some real, it's not even a blend. But why?
Or what David Icke says, we're in a simulation.
Well, that's just crazy. I'm not going there. So could the fakeologist potentially commission Germ for some kind of cartoon that maybe we could use for marketing purposes?
Yeah, for sure. Let's chat offline. Having said that, I do need to make tracks now.
Okay, great. It was a great conversation. I have a bunch of guests that I think I've talked to that might be of interest to you. Do you have a long list of guests that you're trying to make your way through? Because I see you're going on holidays and so on and so forth.
I do. I've got a long,
do you have a
long
queue?
Line of guests. I've got a queue? Yeah, I've got a long schedule.
Okay.
I'll work everything between schedules.
I wouldn't mind throwing a couple your way. I have a guy from South Africa. I get my South African information, who came to Canada, and just a few interesting.
Drop me an email.
Yeah, I'll give you some lists and some contacts if you want. And
I would love it. I'll do the same. I have no problems. I'm not all funny about it. So I'll do the same. All right, fantastic, my friend.
So Germ Warfare is your website, germwarfare.com. Thank you so much for coming on. What a great conversation. What a great sound and great visual on your website and your videos, and you can find them anywhere. And I also like your little buzziness at the end of your videos. You got some really good branding. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, sir. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Say hi to your wife and good luck with everything.
Take it easy, my friend.
Okay. Bye-bye. Okay, there goes Germ Warfare. Whoa, that was interesting, huh? Wow. And great guest, great content. And just check out his site. He's a podcaster. He's a cartoonist. He's very busy. He's on tour. He's vacationing. He's just a really interesting guy. So add him to your list of podcasts. I definitely have been listening to a lot of his stuff. He talks a lot about COVID. We didn't get into half the things I wanted to, because sometimes it's just fun to let the conversation flow, and that's what we did. We've been going about an hour and a half, and we even had a pre-show, which I'll release. And what else? Yeah, what an interesting discussion for sure. Okay, don't forget, we are Value for Value. Let me bring up my Value for Value page, wherever the heck that is. You pay whatever you think this show is worth. I think it's worth a pretty penny, and I think we bring to you some fantastic content. And you pay whatever you think the show's worth. So fakeologist.com/donate. I had a couple of people with credit card problems and whatnot. I really don't really have any insights in the different ways to donate. I think there are enough. So if one doesn't work, you should try another. This is the main one, this donor box thing. But we also have Buy Me a Coffee. We do take crypto, Bitcoin Lightning. So there are a lot of ways. You can join Patreon. There isn't one way. There's one easy way. I don't have a way to accept checks, although I might look into just setting up the PO box again, because there are some people that did use it, but it is expensive for me to set that up. So if there isn't enough participation, it's not really worth it. So just letting you know that we have thought about it, but I'm not a fundraiser, so that's not really the point of this website. But I know there are people that have contacted me and do want to donate, so I'll try and figure out other ways to make that happen. I'm gonna play this as I'm just trying to find the theme music for logging or ending the show. Here we go. I don't have a really good buzzing noise that Germ does on his show, Germ Warfare. He's got some really tight branding and sounds and whatnot. Okay, today is a holiday. Like I said, today is Monday. So I don't know if I'm going to do a show tonight, all shots clot. I had to do this show early because Germ, of course, is way the heck over in Cape Town. And he was gracious. He's really busy, obviously, so he was hard to get on. We tried for about a couple months, and we learned a lot, and I enjoyed it. I hope you guys enjoyed it, too. And I know I'm rambling away here, so I'm going to sign off. Don't forget, go to fakeologist.com. We got a million different links here. We've got forums, the blog. We've got podcasts, archives. We also have Discord. That's what we call audio chat. Join that if you want to be on our Discord. And I have one guy in the comments on BitChute up my rear end. I said, you know what? Just come on the Discord and chat. Maybe not call in to a call-in show. It's probably not the right format. But on the Discord, you can join up and we can just have informal conversations. So come on to the Discord. And we've got about, what, 12 hours, 14 hours of podcasting from Saturday and Sunday. I know this is Monday. So make sure you go there. If you can go to the website or just go on your favorite podcast app and type in audio chat or type in FAK podcast, FAC, FAK. They're two different podcasts. I did get it fixed up on Apple. So you can go to Apple and find it, Apple Podcasts. Although if you use a value for value podcast app, you'll be able to find it. Just by typing in Fakeologist, you'll see two different streams. And we had a good chat with John Robinson last night. The Zundelcast, we'll have him back once a month. And that's about all I got for you. And we'll talk to you wherever next time is. We're going to have a regular week, I guess. Tuesday, Lynn. Fake Nukes Phil, he has four trolls up his butt. So we'll probably check in with him just for a laugh. And Thursday is Frank and whoever else comes on. And we got more guests, more interesting guests coming up as well. So stick around. All right, take care.